You're listening to episode number 79 of The Green Elephant in the Room.
We had too much information to share on our last podcast titled, Why is Climate Change So Hard to Fix? That, combined with the overwhelming response from our listeners, mobilized us to offer up part two, Why is Climate Change So Hard to Fight?
This is your host, Eco Rico. We are going to go from the macro to the micro in this episode. We will start with the biggest macro in the world, the planet itself. Then to the micro, arguably the most sophisticated and complex object in the universe, our pea brain. We're also going to take another crack at the news media and the lousy job they're doing of covering environmental issues. In this section, we're going to explore a fascinating concept, hyperobjects. A hyperobject is a word for things too enormous to name. An expression to describe things that are within our understanding, but beyond our immediate conceptual grasp. They are often vast in time and space and defeat our traditional ideas about what a thing is in the first place. Because we tend to think of objects as items we can fit within our field of vision, the prefix hyper, which means over or beyond in Greek, suggests massive excess or exaggeration. We can conceptualize hyperobjects, but we cannot see them as a whole. The ultimate hyperobject would be space with its trillions of suns, dark matter, black holes, and distances measured in light years. A light year would be a hyperobject in itself, with its speeds of 186,000 miles, or 300,000 kilometers per second, which is capable of circling the Earth 7 times in 1 second. Sticking closer to Earth, we could ask, is the ocean a hyperobject? Thinking beyond the immense breadth and depth of the world's oceans, try to envision other watery aspects, such as, you can dip your foot into the cold waters of Long Island Sound while it's the same global ocean that bathes some burnt bodies in Sydney. Or the constant undulation and movement of water and waves, the massive flowing and churning of unimaginable volumes of salty liquid that is deep as Mount Everest is tall. Imagine how unlikely that the large-scale human connectivity and globalization would have developed without the seven seas. Some things are so vast we will never witness them fully, even the mundane. For example, all the styrofoam cups in the world, ever. You don't know their exact number, but you know that number is finite and they are everywhere. Or the knowledge that styrofoam takes 500 years to decompose, and those flimsy cups will outlive you by centuries. Or that chicken bones may be the legacy of our time, with a standing population of more than 23 billion domesticated live chickens that far outnumber the human population by threefold. If you combine the mass of all these chickens, it would be greater than that of all other birds alive on Earth today. Chicken consumption is growing faster than the consumption of any other kind of meat. More than 65 billion chickens were slaughtered in 2022 alone, and it's on pace to surpass pork as the world's most consumed meat. The sheer abundance of chicken consumption, coupled with the strange skeletons of modern chickens, will leave a unique human fingerprint to be found in the Earth's strata millions of years from now. The hit summer movie Oppenheimer displayed in an instant the ability of humans to create something so formidable, so frightening, that for generations we've had to live with the fear of a nuclear holocaust. 1 second into the hyperobject of the atomic age, we succumb to the realization that we could design our own worst nightmare, an apocalyptic Armageddon. Hyperobjects are pervasive, ubiquitous, and inescapable. Not surprisingly, the most commonly recognized hyper-object is climate change, a manifest destiny of our own making. Climate change is unlike any other environmental problem we've ever faced. We can't fix it the way we started to fix smog or the ozone hole, with specific regulations and treaties and limited technological changes. Climate change is too big in space, time, and complexity. The emissions that cause it are too central a consequence of the efforts of some 8 billion people. Modern humans, in a cynical and artificial way, have imagined themselves critically distanced from the world, from nature. We could call it the self-centeredness of humanity. When we are increasingly aware of the forces that threaten to wash, blow, burn, or radiate us into oblivion, have become more tangible, unmistakable, unambiguous. The world, in the old sense, is over, because the weather, like nature, is no longer a neutral backdrop where we can rely on it to stay stationary and fixed, while we play out our little human dramas in front of it. That old world of human foreground and natural background is gone. Worries about the weather are a mere symptom of something huge, foreboding, and illogical in its entirety. Climate is a hyper-object, and global warming is the embodiment of the monster unleashed. We are powerless in the face of mammoth energies beyond our control. We are now faced with massive forces whose inputs defy our physical perceptions. You might think, in this time of profound human and climate trauma, that the world is coming to an end. However, some have argued that it has already ended. Not because doomsday has arrived, but because what we call the world, a place that revolves around human beings and is defined by what we can see and feel, is simply too small to cope with the colossal impact of 8,000 million humans anymore. In the climate hyperobject, we see something bigger than us, something bigger than we could possibly imagine, the immense structural physical forces all around us. The overwhelming feeling of something so big and complex that we can't see it, even as it surrounds us and often terrifies us. The hyperobject of our creation has arrived all on its own in the form of fire, flood, and deadly plague. Some are seeing this phenomenon as humbling. Of course, it's horrifying, but at the same time, it's empowering to discover the language for this feeling and to be able to name it. The hope is that by understanding what is happening, we can transition into a new way of thinking, of seeing, of taking action. The bizarre and destabilizing nature of hyperobjects, forces we cannot even completely comprehend, drives us to realize that we will now live in a world where humans are no longer as powerful as we once imagined. Humans are no longer the hero in the story of creation. The promise is we will consider new ways of coexisting, both with other people and with all other beings on the planet. If we can find it in ourselves to give up our need to dominate, control, and exploit everything around us, we might find a way to care for and take more pleasure in each other, in the world around us, and in life itself. Let's go from the macro to the micro, the human brain. Here's something to wrap your mind around. The human brain is more complex than any other known structure in the universe. It contains hundreds of billions of cells interlinked through trillions of connections. The brain boggles the mind. So the question is, if we're so smart, why isn't the public heeding scientists and demanding climate action by politicians that could help deal with these destructive weather extremes? You can point fingers at the influence of fossil fuel companies, at misinformation from climate deniers, and at political obstructionism, notably from a fragmented Republican Party. But a much deeper force is also at work, the way our brains function. Humans aren't well wired to act on complex statistical risks. We care a lot more about the tangible present than the distant future. Many of us do that to the extreme, what behavioral scientists call hyperbolic discounting, which makes it particularly hard to grapple with something like climate change, where the biggest dangers are yet to come. Hyperbolic discounting is a perceptual bias where people choose smaller, immediate rewards rather than larger, later rewards, and this occurs more when the delay is closer to the present than to the future. Hyperbolic discounting is usually studied by asking people if they would rather get $50 now or $100 next year. What would you choose? Less money today or double your money next year? For the grand majority, it is now. Our mental space is limited, and we aren't primed to focus on difficult and complex subjects. Except for a small fraction that are highly motivated, most voters know little about the ins and outs of climate change or the policy options relating to it. Instead, voters' opinions about such things come from the connection to concepts such as political party affiliation and basic ideology. It isn't surprising, then, that most people don't process information about extreme events the way scientists do, and they don't do a good job of holding politicians accountable when the effects of political inaction are far removed from the policy failures that caused them. The arrival of extreme events, hurricanes, wildfires, drought, torrential rainfall, is not proof to many people that scientists are right and that a complete rethinking of climate policy is overdue. Instead, voters see these shocks more often as evidence that things are out of whack. Political science calls such decision-making retrospective voting, and it too is rooted in how the brain deals with complex topics. It seems less rational, but for busy voters, focusing on immediate, visible results in situations is a practical way to assess politicians. When it comes to climate change, this sort of brain-driven behavior tends to create turnover in political leadership rather than the continuity needed for long-term planning. Overall, the politics of controlling carbon emissions, especially given the time horizons we face, will continue to bring out the worst in how we make important policy decisions. Voters consistently report being worried about climate change, but asked to rank their priorities, they rarely put climate policy high on the list. Nor does the public indicate that it is willing to spend what is needed to address the problem. What voters know is mixed, muddled, and sparse. Here's a perfect example that illustrates this. Public opinion polls have long found that Americans say they are concerned about climate change. But does that mean people are willing to reduce their own standard of living and make personal sacrifices in an effort to do something about it? Here's a fascinating study that compels voters to actually put a dollar value on their climate commitment. A recent survey finds that 68% of Americans would not be willing to pay even $10 more a month in higher electricity bills, even if the money were being used to combat climate change. Was there any amount Americans were willing to pay to tackle climate change? Yes, $1. 57% of Americans said they would be willing to pay a $1 a month fee in their electric bills to combat climate change. Although Americans say they are worried about climate change, most clearly they aren't worried enough to spend their own money on it or make personal sacrifices for the cause. This grim analysis explains why political systems will always be playing catch-up. Even with the extreme weather events hammering the globe, public support for the policies needed to stop global warming will be fleeting. But the realization can also inspire new policy strategies that are better wired for our political brains. We may have reached that point. With the firestorms and summer-long heat waves are reminding the public, for now, if not for long, is that the consequences of failure are big. At a moment when global warming is affecting people's lives on a daily basis, climate change activists also seem to have finally found a winning public message in the Inflation Reduction Act, which is really a climate bill, with its promise of job creation and large-scale economic investments in alternative energy infrastructure. Another reason why it's so hard to tackle climate change has to do with activism. What can we do as individuals to possibly fight the climate crisis? Faced with such mammoth opponents as big oil and giant corporations, it can feel like anything we do will be useless. What can we achieve by waving a sign at a protest march? It's understandable why people feel these doubts. After all, it's now popular to say that individuals cannot fight against climate change because it's the corporations who are responsible for the vast majority of the pollution that is causing it. However, that's a simplistic way of looking at it. The obvious question is, how are we going to achieve these large-scale changes? This is the most important challenge and significant opportunity that humanity has ever faced. We say opportunity because historically, there are few events of such magnitude that they require an entire reevaluation of how our societies are structured. We are on the cusp of one of those historic inflections. A huge part of the anxiety that we feel about the climate crisis comes from this feeling that it's something insurmountable, that it's too far out of our hands, that we are powerless to do anything about it, and that we are alone in feeling like this. Through taking action, through organizing, through campaigning, we've come to realize that we aren't powerless at all. We aren't alone. I've seen firsthand how everything can change when we come together, form movements, and refuse to accept that the world will always be this way. We can find community that can hold us when we need to be held and stand beside us in action. How do we go about this monumental effort? We will address it at the end of this episode. It has been a summer of unparalleled heat across the globe. The alarming effect of a rapidly warming world kindled by fossil fuels. But despite decades of warnings from scientists who have long predicted that human-caused climate change would bring dire consequences, news organizations are still struggling to connect the dots in their daily coverage. The media's climate reporting has improved recently, but most news organizations are still not giving the accelerating crisis anything like the amount of urgency of coverage the story deserves. There is considerable room for improvement. Especially in the United States, most TV news reports on the ferocious heat and other weather extremes afflicting millions of people this summer have not even mentioned the words climate change. The science is unequivocal on that connection, and leaving it out leaves audiences not just uninformed, but misinformed. The unprecedented wind-whipped fires that devastated the island of Maui recently, killing more than 100 people, has received high volumes of attention from major media outlets, which have gone to remarkable lengths to gather reporting from the scene. But only 4% of television news segments about the disaster during a two-day period starting on August 9th tie the catastrophe to climate change. More alarmingly, it's only a few news organizations, CNN and MSNBC, that are the 4% referring to it. ABC, CBS, and NBC News did not tie the fires to climate change in any of the 35 segments that aired. Many media outlets still treat climate as a niche issue, giving it very little coverage except when an unprecedented bout of extreme weather takes place. And an even bigger problem is, when climate is mentioned, it's almost like a casual passing remark, like, scientists tell us that this storm, or flood, or fire was made worse by climate change. They never specifically say what the viewer can do about it. If you give it a little thought, the reason is obvious. These news outlets are for-profit organizations. They need to make money like any other business. It is well known that meat and transportation are the twin drivers of both the climate and the biodiversity crises. That means that these national news organizations would be offending fast food and national chain restaurants who advertise with them. On the transportation side, it would be the major airlines and the biggest television advertiser of all, automobiles, particularly the giant SUVs and the big trucks. Yes, there are ads for electric vehicles now, but with EV sales at 6% of all new car sales, well, you get the idea. This, of course, would include your local neighborhood gas station, which are all owned and run by big oil corporations. The problem is that we're not seeing the sort of coverage that we should be seeing among the largest networks, the major nightly news programs, and cable news programs. What is happening with the environment is the biggest threat that we face, and it should be the lead story on every news program. Instead, since 2016, now and then President Donald Trump's antics have dominated the news cycle. His latest silly tweet of the day is entertaining, but why does the media have to spend 100 times as much on that stuff as they do on the single greatest threat that we face? The lack of media coverage on climate change definitely contributes to the problem that a lot of Americans don't recognize how serious this issue is. The fossil fuel industry is never even acknowledged, considering the hair on fire events happening all over the globe. This has to change. Effective climate communication requires the full picture of climate change. If American journalism doesn't get the climate story right, and soon, no other story will matter. The news media's past climate failures can be redeemed only by an immediate shift to more high-profile, inclusive, and fearless coverage. We need to call on all journalists and news outlets to join the conversation about how to make that happen. As the nation's founders envisioned long ago, the role of a free press is to inform the people and hold the powerful accountable. These days, our collective survival demands nothing less. On this episode's webpage, which is linked in the show notes, we give you sources for the best news organizations to get your environmental coverage.
Watching our environment degrade can be frustrating and overwhelming. What can one person do? How can one person make a difference? The Green Elephant has some good news that will fuel your climate optimism. We have created A Call to Act, an online resource that is packed with hundreds of eco-organizations, eco-activities, and eco-actions you can take today. In A Call to Act, you will find resources to organize, mobilize, participate, activate. Find links to climate meetup action groups, volunteer eco opportunities, green careers, how to connect with your elected officials, and much more. Do yourself and the planet a favor. Today is the day for you to be a part of the climate solution. We have included a link in the show notes.